were just saying, oh, sorry, you breathed. You were about to say
Nope,
something.
we were just talking about how gorgeous we are.
We were just talking about hair masks and lipstick, and I wish we'd recorded that piece because it
Because
would.
never in a million years have I
Yeah.
ever talked about both of those things
No,
ever.
either of
And then
those
in the
things
same,
ever.
yeah, right.
I know, Ali.
I'm super girly now.
You
Thanks,
look so
Mia.
pretty. You look really beautiful. Yeah. Lovely. Nice. Hello.
Now you're making me blush. Like we were good and now we've gone over the limit.
Oh.
This
Mm-mm-mm.
today we're talking about emotional
Lao-su.
Lao Tzu. Yes, I don't know how to say it right, so that's how we say it in Wisconsin.
Oh, is it okay? Let's
When we
only say
refer
it
to
maybe.
him in Wisconsin, which happens a lot
Yeah, because
at
of
the
Lao.
supper clubs. Lao
Yeah.
Tzu.
Lao. Oh, you have supper clubs. You're fancy.
No, we're not fancy. And if you came here, you would know that a supper club is basically an excuse to serve food. But the supper club itself is like a gigantic, humongous bar, like enormous bar with a few tables for food. So you sit at the bar and you order your food, and you do all the things, but you drink and you drink and you drink. And then when your food is up, the waitress comes and gets you from the bar and you go back and sit and eat, and then you come back to the bar.
I'm coming over and we're going to supper club. It
You
sounds
can't,
fancy,
it
but
is, it's not, it's
I
not. But it's a way, it's like a community, like a pub would be a
Oh,
community builder.
I'm coming
Yeah.
over for that. So, at your supper clubs, you're constantly chatting about Lao.
Lao, our friend Lao.
Yeah.
He's the bomb.
So you
What's
said
the
something at
quote?
the beginning, Ali. You said today we're going to talk about emotional work.
Yeah, it was like about the it sounds so simple, like emotional regulation. And everybody, just like we all think we're good drivers and we all think we're good people, we all think we can regulate our emotions. We all think we are. And I'm not saying that we're not. What I think a lot of us are blind to, including me, which is why it's coming up for me, is when I work with horses, I thought I was regulated. Only to be in the ring in the arena with the horse and have the facilitator ask me where my breath is. And I was like, what do you mean? Right? Like I was not aware that I was not actually fully regulated. I think, you know, it's not like you either is or you ain't regulated. It's like, how regulated are you? And how aware are we? Because I think we all think we're aware.
I really like that question, Ali. How regulated are you?
Are you writing it
And
down?
I've written it down because
You're going to refer to it often?
it's going to be my go-to question now.
Regulated.
What would you like for dinner? How regulated am
That
I
depends.
before you
Where's your
ask me what
breath?
I want for dinner? I love that question. And so what I'm seeing is that the horse. Because I'm related, you're relating it to horses, I'm
Yes.
relating it to children.
Same thing.
And yeah, and exactly. So what I'm seeing and what you're saying is that the horse is the mirror for your, in
He
that
wouldn't
instance that we
come
talk about,
near me.
yes, exactly. We talked about this last week or the week before.
Yeah.
You were in the paddock, in the ring. Just showing off,
Yes,
trying
I
to look
was.
good in front of the
Yes.
other people,
Yes.
and thinking you've got it all under control, and the horse is 50 yards away from you, is like, I'm not going anywhere near that woman.
She's not centered and she's not grounded. He could tell. I mean, in the big scheme of things, is any of this true? Do we really know what horses think? I don't know. Like, I don't know if he was over there like this bitch.
Do we really know what horses think?
However, the data that I have is that once I was able to share why I was breathing so shallow and all the thoughts that were going through my head, once I got that out and I could take a nice deep breath, that's when the horse came over. And I think people that work with horses are like, yeah, that's how it works with them. I live with dogs. I know how I need to be in order to have the dog want to come near me.
And as I said, I think it also works for children. You can also,
100%. That's why it's so powerful.
yeah, exactly. And just to throw in the Lao Tzu bit, otherwise we won't, no one will know why we're even talking
Yeah.
about
Are they
him.
going to go back to that?
We have a quote here, which is from Lao Tzu. If you are depressed, you are living in the past. If you are anxious, you are living in the future. If you are at peace, you are living in the present. And we connected that yesterday when we were chatting. We connected that to
Oh, yeah.
regulation of our emotions.
So any, well, I'm questioning where we should go because there's so many places. I want to make a note somewhere in this podcast that if you lead people and you're not aware that you aren't regulated, it can create a huge mess everywhere you go.
Excuse me.
You and I know somebody and worked with somebody who was unaware. I'm real sorry about that. We'll have
Don't
to
think
dub that
Ollie
out.
is regulated.
Well, there could be an assassin, so he's just doing his job. We worked with somebody who was not aware that they were not regulated, and then because they weren't aware, they also couldn't see the knock-on effect of what it did in the space. And it was really disruptive. And if I'm a leader and I don't understand that I'm not regulated, even though I think I am, because remember, we all think we are, and I don't even know that I don't know, well, then there's no chance that I'm going to be able to understand why I can't get people to work with me. Why do my teams fall apart? Why is it so hard for them to be accountable? Why?
Yeah, the thing that really is sort of sticking out for me in what you've just said is I will believe that my emotional response is justified.
Yes.
So I'm tying that in. Obviously, we're thinking in the moment here, but I'm tying that in with what you said about not having awareness. So if I'm unaware of and not very well practiced at regulating, noticing my emotions and then knowing how to regulate them, how to name them, and how to work with them, and how to safely and appropriately express them, if I don't have those tools at my fingertips, I may well think that my explosion, we don't tend to, although I think it can be a problem, we don't tend to sort of think of an explosion of love as being a problem. However, we do know that love bombing is a problem. We do know that loving on people and sort of loving people, smothering people as opposed to loving people can be a problem. So that's like an overexpression of that sentiment or emotion of love. The place we tend to find more problem with it is when someone is being aggressive, rude,
Abrasive.
abrasive, shouting, name calling. And if we don't have ways of regulating ourselves, and not just when we're at the height of, but actually practices to support sort of a continued regulation of our emotions, we'll blow up. I will blow up and I will think my explosion was justified. And I will look at the evidence in front of me. In my field of work, I'll look at the child in front of me, or the parent will look at the child in front of them and they'll say, "Well,
I had to. They
I
were being
had to."
disrespectful.
Yeah, they weren't listening. I had to raise my voice. I had to shout. I was furious because what they did was so awful. And the same is whether you're leading in a family or whether you're leading in a boardroom or leading a team that isn't your family. You'll finger point over there and say, "This explosion that I'm having is justified because of that person's behavior."
Yeah, I have an example. One is with there's these people that work together, a group of people that work together, and there was a conflict that happened inside the team. And two of the people kind of were like coming at each other, and they were in an argument. I wasn't there, but I received some messages after the fact from both of them. And the person that first wrote to me, I'm being very careful not to identify anybody,
Yeah, important.
said, well, this is what happened. So kind of shared with me like the police report. It's not a real police report, but like if it was a police report, you know, it was this time, this is what
The
happened.
facts, yeah.
Yeah, the facts of the matter. And then they said, and so, you know, because this is continued disrespect and continued failure to own, you know, to be irresponsible, I had to XYZ. And in the text, I went back and I said, can you separate the facts from the feelings? And we did. And then I was like, cool. So can you see how when we think that our feelings are facts, how we tend to get ourselves all spun up? And he couldn't see it. He's like,
No.
but it is disrespectful. And I was like, prove it. And then he went back to the facts. I'm like, I know that's what you think. I know that's the opinion you have. I know that's the conclusion that you've drawn, but it ain't a fact. I could look at the same thing and say, you know, that's not disrespectful. That's just disorganized, right? I can name it something else. The point is, that's an interpretation. It isn't a fact. And and that's what you're speaking to, is that then his response was to address the disrespect and the irresponsibility of it, which, as you can imagine, didn't go well, because the person that that's being aimed at is like, this is not disrespect. This is not irresponsibility. And then they were justified in their defense. And they're like coming back at. And now we've got a tug of war going on, and both sides cannot see. They can't see anything but their own belief system, which is all interpretation.
Which, comes back to that point that as the leader in the room, whether you're the parent, whether you're the CEO, whether you're the team leader, the supervisor, whatever your role is, it's really important to be able to regulate and distinguish where we are.
Yeah.
Am I in the land of facts? Am I in the land of interpretation? And I kind of want to bring it back to that sort of Lao Tzu piece and maybe
Yeah.
break it down into the three areas, because we're sort of advocating for, if you are at peace, you're living at in the present, which is obviously the bit that everybody wants, to have the wonderful experience of peacefulness the whole time. So if you're depressed, you're living in the past. If you're anxious, you are living in the future. Which one of those takes your fancy, Ali?
Future. I think that's
Future,
a
yeah.
lot of where people, there's a lot of anxiety. At least that's the interpretation of what people tend to bring to me. My clients, my family, myself.
Yeah, and we distinguished yesterday, didn't we, the difference between anxiety and stress.
Yeah.
And you really liked that
Oh, it
distinction,
was so good.
which is in a program that I run for local government, for children's services. And in that program, we distinguish between stress and anxiety. And stress, there's an image of, little fish swimming along and a massive shark hot on the tail of the fish. And that is stress. There is a real life, I mean, obviously this is a picture, but there's a real life shark. It's there. It's a fact. It's happening. And it's a stressful situation. Anxiety, the picture that demonstrates anxiety is a little fish swimming along with a thought bubble and a picture of the shark. So it's our imaginings.
It's manufactured
Yeah, it's
in our
our,
minds.
yeah, made up. I mean, to be honest, that happens in the present as well. We make up stuff about what's happening in the present,
Yes.
which will cause anxiety in the present. But if we
Yes.
stick with kind of like, just for argument's sake, with Lao Tzu's kind of idea, we make ourselves anxious because
Yes.
we are imagining things that have not factually, actually occurred yet.
It's so funny. I'm going back to, I had a meeting with a group of people that I didn't know. I knew one person in the group, and afterwards I recounted this interaction with these people. We had an hour-long meeting. It was about some things, and I said to the one person I did know the next day, I was like, "Wow, it really seemed like those people did not like me." And she went, "Really?" I remember sitting at the table looking at these other people and saying, they really don't like me. Again, was that reality? Was it true? Was I picking up on something, or was I manufacturing that? Was I imagining that? Was I creating that meaning out of that moment? Both, probably a little bit of both. I mean, I'll never know because I didn't ask. And even if I ask, they may not tell me the truth, right? Like, so there's no shortage of ways that our minds will generate and manufacture an anxiety, much of it being about the future. But like, I love that you said, sometimes we do it even in the moment.
Yeah, I think we are doing it in the moment, a lot, because we're interpreting what's happening and we're giving it meaning. And then the meaning that I attach to what's happening in the moment, will create an emotional response in me. So yeah, I don't know how to kind of like slice the two apart. I think there's stuff happening in the moment, and there's also future sort of catastrophizing
Yeah.
that's happening in my mind, future thinking that's happening in my mind in the present moment. But in terms of what we do, you know, ideally as children, we are taught to emotionally regulate, and we learn that by observing the adults who are looking after us, and
Yeah, I
also by,
feel like I didn't learn that as a child.
you don't
I
feel
didn't
like,
learn how to regulate as a child. I was not taught.
yeah.
I
Do you read?
watched
No, carry on.
the one of my parents would stuff and explode. So that was they weren't regulating. They were just stuffing and stuffing and stuffing until the thing blew up. And then it would happen at a really weird, you would blow up over like spilled milk.
Yeah.
That's an actual thing that happened in my life. And if you were to ask my sister or my mother, if I ever spilled anything at the table, I would get up and run and hide behind the couch. Like, and I remember my sister laughing at me and me not understanding why that was funny, because I was genuinely terrified. So I had one parent that stuffed and exploded, and then I had one parent that had constant vitriol, so never regulated. So then there was like sober and drunk. So the sober vitriol was more measured. The drunk vitriol was very loose and very, there was a lot of it, right? So there was never a space where it was okay to experience emotions, because I felt as a child the way I thought about it was like my job was to manage the people in the room, manage their experience and their emotions, which is how you get to be a people pleaser, by the way.
I mean, and I can see how stuffing, we could think that we're managing our emotions, that we when we're stuffing them down because we're suppressing them and they're not spilling out in that moment. So we think, oh, I'm emotionally regulating here because I'm stuffing these things down. However, you know, that idea of pushing something down, it's going to pop up.
It's
going to pop
always
up somewhere
does.
at some point, and often it will be the camel that broke the straw that broke the camel's back. It will be the spilt milk, the tiniest thing that then creates this enormous eruption, which then in the child, in the employee, in the co-worker, the fellow teammate, the colleague, whoever we are in relationship with,
Yes.
will give them a really distorted view of what's going on, because it's like, oh my God, I just didn't put the lid on the pen. This person went
Yes.
nuts.
Yes.
Or I spilt my coffee or my milk. This
Yes.
person went crazy, because we're not necessarily aware. I think that's actually possibly not true, that we're not necessarily aware of all of the suppression of emotion that has happened. But having said that, I think we get a vibe of people, something isn't quite right. There's like an inauthentic, like something isn't quite right when someone is suppressing. There's often
Yes.
like a clenched jaw when we're suppressing, a version of gritted teeth, because we are trying to keep something in and trying to keep something down.
Yes.
Some huffing, some puffing, some eye rolling, that happens. So actually, I think we do emit clues into
I
the
think
act.
we actually, not only do we emit them, but most of us pick up on them.
Yeah.
We know when somebody's stuffing. I have a client, and my husband is this way too, that get flooded,
Can you
which
explain flooded?
means they are having an emotional, they're about to feel some emotion, and it's uncomfortable, and it seems like they physically or energetically leave their body. They get a faraway stare, they like dissociate, and they get a faraway stare, and they're not engaged. They might be looking right at your face, but they're not there.
I'm not there. Yeah, I do that. I do
With
that in moments of yeah, in certain
oh.
moments, in relationship with my mom. I will.
Yes.
And of course, that's where I learned about emotional regulation or not.
Right.
And I was saying to you yesterday, now in schools here in the UK, we have ELSAs, which are emotional support or emotional literacy support assistants, who work with children where they need a little bit of extra help to name their emotions, to be able to recognize what happens in, what happens in your body when you're feeling this emotion that you've named. What do you notice about other people when they're experiencing that emotion? So it starts to give someone language around it, and then practices. So as adults, we maybe have more access to language around it. I don't know if that's true.
It's not. My husband, remember the story when we were doing a parent therapy? Our daughter was in a therapeutic program, and we went to the parent. They were doing parent education. So we're in this room with other parents. Their children, all of our children were in this other program together, and she was teaching us validation, and she gave us like some prompts, and then we were to partner up and go through the prompts and validate, 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 validate. So I met with, my another mother and I, and we went through it 2 minutes, and we went through like 20 prompts. Like it was nothing. We're like boom, boom, boom. I turn around, my husband is with another dad. They had gotten through like two. And it hit me in that moment, like he doesn't have the language. He can't name it. It's like a foreign language for him. So we printed off at home, we printed off the emotions wheel, which I adore. It's simple, it's color-coded, it's great, and it is
Massive.
sufficient. And we put it right on, we have a cabinet right by our dinner table, and we practiced for years. Open it up, look at the emotions wheel, bust a fab. I feel about because. I feel excited about school because I got an A on my math test. Boom. Next. So I don't know that people have language. I did not have language around anything.
No, that's right. Actually, you're right, Ali. I'm making an assumption there that, as we grow, we acquire more language, so we
Yes.
probably acquire language for our emotions. But actually, if we haven't been taught to connect words, you know, with our emotions.
Right.
They're just things that are floating around that we can't.
And if you get flooded, you're not even open to the to, like, when you talk to my husband, he's like, I literally don't know what I'm feeling. You know, and he's got the deer in the headlights stare, and I'm like, what are you feeling right now? And he's like, I don't know. I'm out of here. I just know that I'm energetically, I've left. Yeah, yeah. I left 10 seconds ago.
Because it's too much to deal with. So that sort of would maybe be helpful for anyone who's listening to this, who has that experience. So what do we practice? What can we practice in order to help us be able to emotionally regulate ourselves, enable us to be more connected? So one of the things is the emotion wheel. We can put a link to that at the bottom of this podcast.
Just search it. Emotions wheel.
Okay, easy.
There's like a thousand versions of them. They're all great.
Yeah. Okay. Mindfulness practices, breathing, slowing down in the moment. And that might be hard to do if you've never practiced it before. So I would strongly suggest that people practice this, not when they're in a heightened state of emotion, but simply practice for 5 minutes
every day,
2 minutes a day. Just breathing. Just practice being quiet and still using the breath.
Which sounds great. So you and I practiced this. Something got us to the point where we were willing to take the time and energy every day to work on breathing and slowing our nervous system down. You had your reasons, I had mine. And when we're working with people, whether they're parents or leaders or our next door neighbor or our own children, you know, it's really a good idea to every single day intentionally breathe so that when you need it, it will work. The thing that I run into a lot with my clients is intellectually, it's a good idea. There's something in the way of taking that daily action. Does that make sense?
They're practicing on a daily basis.
So 2 weeks later, they come back in and I say, how has your breathing practice gone? And they're like, I haven't done it. Just like I did for years.
Yeah.
I didn't do it. Why not? I don't know. Didn't think about it. Didn't feel like it. Got busy. Forgot. Didn't write it down. Couldn't find the time. So there's a thousand reasons why. But at some point, something brought you to actually practicing it. Do you remember what that was?
No. Did I tell you what it was? Because I don't remember.
I don't think you ever told me what it was. I'm thinking that for myself, what happened was I was in a community. I was in Rich Litvin's community. And every time we got together, which was like every other week, I think, we started with 1 to 2 minutes of breathing. And so it wasn't a daily practice, but it was at least a bi-monthly. Oh boy, I don't remember how it works, but every other week we would do it.
Fortnightly,
And then fortnightly. And then I had an epiphany one time where I just closed my eyes and I breathed and I felt my body drop into a calm state. And I was like, oh, like something clicked in me. And I was like, oh, I get it now. But until that happened, I was like, I'm just doing it because somebody's leading me through it. I wasn't doing it on my own. And then once I felt that, I was like, I want to be able to do that a lot. And especially when things are heightened. Mm. So then I kept practicing.
Yeah, that's when you started. Yeah, I think I may have come to it a while ago as part of learning about hypnosis.
Mm-hmm.
Because that is a very calming, you know, as a hypnotherapist, you're taking somebody, or if you're using self-hypnosis, you're taking yourself into a very calm state, and you would use your breath for that. That would be one of the ways that you would do it. But I have noticed increasingly that I am aware of my breath. I'm aware when my breath is very high and tight in my chest.
Yeah.
And I don't have much capacity with it. So, I mean, again, it's just a case of choosing to practice. And when you fall off that wagon of practice, bringing yourself back. But whether it's mindfulness, whether it's breathing in, breathing out, and following your fingers, whether it's box breathing, whether it's, you know, your five senses, something you can hear, something you can see, something you can taste, etc., in the moment to bring you, whatever your practice is, it's about practicing it, for me anyway, not when I need it.
Yes.
I don't just drink water when I'm feeling particularly thirsty. I drink water throughout the day as a habit.
Yeah.
So
to
I think
prevent the
is,
thirst.
Yeah. I think that's something. And I think also a useful practice is just asking ourselves, you know, fact or fiction, fact or interpretation.
Oh, huge. Yes. Well, it's great in as long as you can identify fact. What happens for many people, including myself, is that I can't discern the fact. Like that one person I was talking about before, he was sure that disrespect was a fact, that this person was disrespecting him. Mm. And I was like, it's not. It's your conclusion, but it's not a fact. So, no. Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, again, that takes practice, you know.
Yes, but my point was like, if I'm practicing fact versus fiction and I'm convincing myself that my fictions are facts, it's like we sometimes need other people to check our work. That's all.
Yeah.
So in the beginning, it may be, you know, just asking somebody, like, are these facts or are these, you know, interpretations? Can you help me? Same thing with the breathing, like mindfulness, if you can't seem to do the practice on your own, take a class, find an online group, download a tool or an app to help you.
Yeah, and they are plentiful. I mean, you know, team meetings in many places start with breathing now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we start team meetings, you know, in children services with mindfulness practice, the beginning of a team meeting.
Yeah. Yoga and Pilates are both great ways to practice mindfulness and being in your body, noticing your breath, if you have a good instructor.
Yeah. Where else to go?
I learned early on a practice where we called it PT, which is a personal timeout. And what we, when our daughter was really, really, what's the right word? Like she was a roller coaster emotionally. And so we had an agreement inside our family that a therapist helped us create, which is when you need a PT, you ask for it. And a PT is 20 minutes, because that's about how long it takes for you to dissolve and like metabolize all of the whatever is going on in your body, adrenaline, cortisol, whatever, and calm the nervous system and get back to homeostasis. And from there, you can get back up into your executive functioning brain. And so we would do that. Like when things got really bad, we'd be like, I think let's take a PT. And so it was like your safety word to be like, this stops, but it doesn't stop forever. It's 20 minutes. The timer starts now.
And then
20
back.
Minutes. And you come back to the space. And we would do that. And sometimes we'd be at dinner and somebody was having an emotional whatever and it was getting heightened. And we'd be like, oops, we're going to take PT. Everybody leave their plates. See you in 20. And we'd all.
I like that. I like the fact that it disrupts the pattern.
Yeah.
But does not abandon.
Yeah, that's the problem.
Whatever it is, the topic or you know, or the activity that you're doing together as a team or a family.
Yeah.
It doesn't just get abandoned, brushed under the carpet,
right,
not spoken about. You come relatively quickly back together as a group.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To continue eating, talking,
yep,
being together. Yeah.
Yep. I'm curious how do you help a parent or a leader when they can't see that they're not regulated? Like I had the example you and I spoke of the other day where One of my clients, their child was crying because my client was leaving and they were with the babysitter. And they didn't want to be with the babysitter, they wanted to be with my client. And my client said, "That's bullshit," to the child. Said, "I was with you yesterday, I was with you this morning, I'm going to be with you tonight." My client didn't understand that in that moment, that came not from a calm and centered state. He was very much outside of the child's experience and was like distancing himself from it.
Yeah, and defensive by the sounds of it. I would put that, I would say that's the parent being defensive and
Yes.
not liking the feedback that they're getting from the
Taking
child.
it very personally.
Yes, taking it very,
Yes.
very personally, and not being with the child. They're being in their own experience, which is,
Yes, that's the
whoa,
danger.
I'm being attacked here. This is bullshit.
Yes.
Here's the list of all the occasions that I've been with you in the last 24 or 48 hours, whatever. Rather than actually being present, and as you said earlier, validating the child's experience, like understanding, getting where the child is at.
Yes. One of the things I share with leaders that most I find most people kind of they scoff at is I say your inability to be with your own emotions will limit your ability to be with your team's emotions. And it sounds like a bumper sticker. It sounds like, okay, fine. What I don't know how to word it more powerfully. That if somebody on my team, let's just say there is actually, I have another colleague who has a team member that cries and tattles to get their way. And because the leadership cannot be with this person's tattling and crying, they just keep it, they keep enabling her. And it's I suspect it's because the leader in the room cannot tolerate it because they can't tolerate any emotion in themselves. And so the knock-on effect of that in family, on teams, in groups of people is huge.
What was the original question? So, how do you work with someone
How
who
do you work with
can't?
a parent that's not aware? Like you had a parent, an example of a parent that called their child names, really derogatory, terrible names. How did you help that person see that like this is actually coming because you're not regulated and you can't think straight?
I mean, I don't think it's any one thing, Ali. I think it's a process, and I think it can be, it doesn't have to be. We can have an insight and suddenly see things differently in the blink of an eye. But it can also take time. But I think one of the ways is to look at the thinking that is creating the emotional response and creating then the actions. I don't name call when I'm feeling happy, calm, centered, relaxed. I name call when I'm agitated, when I feel disrespected. And those emotions drive me to take actions like name calling or lashing out
Raising your
verbally.
voice.
Raising my voice, losing my temper, throwing whatever it is, the shoes on the floor or whatever it is, slamming a door, all of that stuff. That all of those actions are pushed by my erupting emotion, and my emotions are coming from my thinking. What are my beliefs? What am I thinking? What are my beliefs, broad brushstroke, generally, and also specifically, what am I thinking in that moment that is bringing this emotional response up? So to your example, you had an example earlier, Ali,
Well,
not just the
you're
bullshit example, but you had an example of somebody, it's gone out of my head. But I think that's a key part of it. What is the thinking? So they'll be thinking in that moment. You had somebody who said they were being disrespected at work. My thinking in the moment might be, well, this is really disrespectful behavior. Let's put me in the role of parent. This is really disrespectful behavior that I'm receiving from my young person, from my child or my adolescent or whatever in this moment. And I hate being disrespected and everything. Yeah. There's all this thinking that's happening. And then you start to look at the, you know, even get more altitude, pan even further out, not just the thinking in the moment, but generally looking at your broad beliefs about that person and about yourself and about the quality of the relationship you have with that person. Those are the underlying foundations that are, those beliefs are the underlying foundations that are fueling the in the moment thinking, which is pushing that emotion up and then creating action, name calling, door slamming, you know, going back for another and another thing, going back for all of these actions. And then there is an experience that's created, which actually, perhaps ironically, tends to reinforce and fuel.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. So
this thing is, you know, is cyclical. It goes round and round.
It's the working model.
Yeah. So how I work with that is to, wherever we are, and it would usually be around the behaviors.
Yeah.
To then track back and track forward and start to fill in as much information as possible on that loop with that parent.
So you're building the awareness of the working model. Like, what are some things that pop up? Ah, my child is being disrespectful. My child is entitled. I'm a shitty mom. Okay, great. And then what are you looking for proof? Okay, great. And then that's just reinforcing. Okay, great. And so now you get how you're getting stuck in this gigantic working model that your child is all of these things. Yeah. So then what does that do for your parents that you're working with?
You just said it, awareness. So knowledge is power.
Yeah.
Awareness is another word for knowledge. So by working through this, we become more aware, more knowledgeable.
And then do they have something that they can do instead?
They'll create practices, much like we've sort of rattled off a few here. Okay. The first practice would always be noticing. So to notice when this pattern is at play.
Okay.
Nothing more. First step would always be to notice, because then you're reinforcing your awareness. You're strengthening your awareness around something. Yeah. And the practices for each person are going to be highly bespoke and individual. We have said here things like mindfulness. There's a plethora of under mindfulness. You know, breath work, zillions of ways to work with one's breath. We mentioned a couple here. The practice of distinguishing fact from interpretation, another practice.
Yeah.
You named another practice, the 20-minute timeout, collectively as a group or perhaps even individually. But it will be really specific, in my experience.
To the person.
Yes, and I think it's a great place to start with off-the-peg pieces.
Yeah, breath always works. Because humans, it is how our nervous system is wired, that if we breathe in deeply through our nose and breathe out, you know, consciously, it does calm the nervous system.
It will be very specific to that person. I worked with a father who would drive a slightly longer route home in order to allow himself
to
release, and then would sit in the car and breathe, because he wanted to enter his family home at the end of a working day in a particular way. And he was not entering the home in that way. He wanted to be able to walk into his family home, you know, receptive and open to whatever was happening.
Yeah.
And there was at least one child in that house, from memory, who had some additional needs. So it could be quite unpredictable as to what he was going to encounter and what kind of day everybody had had.
Yeah.
And so he built in some practices that worked for him. They didn't bring him into the house an hour and a half after he'd finished work. They were small practices, but he did them every time, every day. And they created, this is the thing, sort of looking for sustainable, small, sustainable practices that we practice even on a day when we don't think we need it.
Especially on the day we don't need it.
You know, because we're building that muscle and developing that practice and for ourselves. So yeah, I think we can start with bespoke, sorry, with off the peg pieces and practices. But I think if we're lucky enough to work with someone one-on-one, we can develop more bespoke practices. But even if we're not working one-on-one with somebody, so we don't have a coach or a practitioner working with us, as we start to try on the off the peg thing, we're like, well, do you know what? I think this, you know, you could take it in a little bit here or roll the sleeve up or whatever it is. So you then start to modify in order to fit into your lifestyle.
Oh, that's great. Feels like a landing.
Yeah.
Feels like we've landed.
Okay. I mean, we'll probably come back to this topic because I think it's really important. And I think you're right. I think you said it earlier that we can often think we are regulated, but we're doing a whole bunch of other things instead. And I'd really love to spend more time talking about that as well. What
Good.
looks like regulation, but perhaps isn't. And again, that's just all about raising our awareness together, isn't it?
Great.
Takeaway? Do you have a takeaway?
My takeaway is that this is really confronting for most of us, me included. That even when I think I have practiced and I've done a great job and I've climbed the learning curve and I'm able to stay calm, cool, and collected no matter what's going on around me. You know, that somehow I still believe I've gotten to a level where I'm like, got it. Only to find I don't got it. And I really thought I had it. So it's my takeaway is I don't it's I'm stunned by my ability to deceive myself. Constantly, right?
That's a great one. What's my takeaway? And it's probably not dissimilar, actually. The moments I had when I realized, you know, that the stuffing feels like emotional regulation, but isn't. So
Oops.
it's probably that was kind of like, oh, that's really interesting. So yeah, it's probably not a dissimilar takeaway, actually. It can look like something, smell like something, but not actually be that. And how do we work with it? Yeah, I think this is definitely a topic to come back to.
Agreed. Thanks for your
Cool.
time today.
Thank you, mon cherie. And thanks
You
for
have.
being with us, Tracy. We
Yes,
love
I hope
you.
Tracy enjoyed this particular episode. All right. See you.
Take care.